Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforming higher education. This message was paid for by EY.
The Guardian.
We're no computers, Sebastian. We're physical.
I think, Sebastian. Therefore, I am.
If you haven't seen the film Blade Runner, that was one of its characters, Pris, quoting the 17th century French philosopher René Descartes.
Alas.
Pris is an android, or replicant, initially created as a basic pleasure model, who ends up involved with a group of renegades. The famous quote, "I think, therefore I am," sometimes called the cogito for the Latin cogito ergo sum, was the result of Descartes' attempt to figure out which of the things he thought he knew were impervious to doubt. Despite all the philosophical skepticism he was putting himself through, which made him doubt whether he could trust his senses or whether he had a physical body, he could be sure that he was thinking, which meant that he had to at least exist. Pris used the line to emphasize more than just her existence. She thought that her ability to think like a human should give her the same rights as one. Humans have been telling stories about artificial beings and thinking about what defines humanity since long before Blade Runner, and even before Descartes. A new book out this month explores the history of robots from as far back as ancient Greece, and asks, did ancient myths like the story of Pandora and her famous box of misery end up influencing the finest technological minds of the 20th and 21st century?
I was surprised to find out that the first SAM missiles, the surface-to-air missiles that patrolled the seas, were named Talos rockets. And even now, DARPA at Pentagon, the military scientists at the Pentagon, recently named their AI-enhanced automated soldier uniform with an acronym Talos. Very deliberate, hearkening back to the Talos myth.
And considering we hope that the future these technologists are leading us into is free of robot rebellion, should we take heed of the examples of mythological automata that ended up breaking Asimov's first law of robotics, that a robot may not injure a human being?
In her story, Frankenstein had hoped to use technology to create an artificial android of great beauty and grace. But the tragedy is that the result was a hideous creature that resented being brought to life. And I think her story remains fresh to us because it spins on that age-old tale that warns against playing God or attempting to create life without really understanding or having foresight about the consequences.
I'm Jordan Erica Weber, and this week I try to figure out if the stories of the ancient Greeks can help us prepare for a future that now seems inevitable. This is Chips with Everything.
The full title of my new book is Gods and Robots, Myths, Machines, and Ancient Dreams of Technology.
Would you mind, just for us, just so that we've got some audio of you saying it, reading out the first quote that you mentioned in the book from the robot TikTok?
Sometimes I imagine that robots were invented to answer philosophers' questions.
It seems like Adrienne Meyer is a research scholar in classics and the history and philosophy of science at Stanford University. She specializes in the study of folk science and has written several books on ancient history and how we can interpret ancient myths and folklore to help us better understand today's scientific world.
Well, since 2006, I've been living and working in Silicon Valley in California, just surrounded by advanced innovations in technology, and I'm very aware of all the modern desires to create artificial life, from robots to AI and improving nature, augmenting, enhancing human powers, even striving toward immortality. So as a historian of ancient science, it seemed natural to try and see how deep the roots of those desires and ideas really could be, and it turns out they're very ancient indeed.
Robots seem like the quintessential science fiction future technology, one of the biggest technological changes that we can expect in our near future.
My original question was who first imagined the concepts of robots and artificial intelligence. Historians of science trace the first working automatons to the Middle Ages, but I was wondering, is it possible that these ideas, these concepts about self-moving devices, automatons, and could they have been imagined long before the technology made them possible? And in fact, technology did follow the myths in antiquity. The ancient Greeks actually did begin making catapults, geared devices like the Antikythera mechanism, self-propelled machines, and lifelike animated statue. Those things happened as early as the 5th century BC.
When you look at these myths that feature automata or some form of artificial life, what do you think tended to be the purpose of these stories?
Well, I think the myths allowed people to let their imaginations soar. They described sort of wonders and marvels that the god of invention, Hephaestus, could make, but they were using the same familiar tools, materials that ordinary blacksmiths and artisans were using on Earth. But in the myths, they achieve astounding results as befitting gods and heroic figures. So the myths allowed people in antiquity to think about how one might be able to fabricate a self-moving device if only one possessed the divine powers and ingenuity of a god.
Adrienne writes about dozens of characters from ancient legends, and though each is fascinating in its own way, we cannot possibly discuss them all here. But it seems right to start with one of the first, a character from ancient Greek mythology called Talos.
A giant bronze figure of a man made by Hephaestus with the mission of defending King Minos and his kingdom of Crete. So Talos was a self-moving automaton. He was said to march around the island of Crete 3 times a day, and he was kind of programmed or given the task to spot strange ships, and he could then pick up boulders and hurl them at invaders. Talos could also heat his bronze body to red hot and then crush enemies to roast them alive. And Jason and the Argonauts encountered Talos on their quest for the Golden Fleece.
Drop the gun, you are under arrest.
So basically, Talos is like the ancient Greek equivalent to RoboCop.
Thank you for your cooperation. Good night.
How did Talos work, then, in this story?
Talos had a single artery or vein, a tube, going from his head to toe. But instead of blood, he was powered by ichor, and ichor is the mysterious fluid of the gods. His entire vivisystem was sealed with a bronze nail or a bolt at his ankle. So I think the ancients imagined Talos as a kind of cyborg, hybrid human and machine.
We seem very keen to anthropomorphize mechanical beings like Talos, to see them as human-like and to empathize with them. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, there are a lot of modern studies that try to determine why it is that we humans tend to anthropomorphize robots and other non-sentient things. The best we can say is that we seem to be somehow hardwired to bestow human-like characteristics on things that seem to us somehow alive, that react to us, or that we imagine are somehow lifelike.
People still disagree over the definition of a robot, as you mentioned earlier. But you argue that the Talos myth embodies these kind of age-old questions about what it is to be a human. Why is that?
Well, it's interesting that in the original myth, Medea convinces Talos that she could make him immortal, but only if he allowed her to remove that bronze bolt on his ankle. And Talos was persuaded by this, and they unsealed the bolt so that his ichor bled out. In the myth, he desires to be immortal like a human. He can be persuaded and fooled. I mean, he's not totally a machine. He can be tricked. So the human qualities are what make his destruction feel so tragic, both in antiquity and to us today. We feel sympathy for a robot that was fooled and killed while simply going about his job. And it's interesting, there's an ancient vase painting of 2,500 years ago, and the dying Talos is depicted as a metallic man. He's falling backwards as Jason is using a tool to remove the bolt on his ankle. And the artist painted what looks like a teardrop on the cheek falling from the robot's eye.
Later in the book, Adrian talks about how the gods in these myths create strong artificial beings by taking the better, more powerful traits associated with beasts and using them to offset the inherent weaknesses of mortals. Even today, inventors want to make robots that are stronger than humans, or to use technology to enhance humans, like soldiers with AI exoskeletons. Given the apprehension around some of these ideas, is there a sense in which we fail to learn from the ancient Greeks who created these myths?
Well, there are also myriad tales about the quest to turn back the clock on aging and becoming immortal, making death optional today. But in the myths, tales like that about getting rid of aging and becoming immortal, every one of those tales backfires somehow. The message from antiquity seems to be that there's something very crucially human about the fact that we die, that we're mortal. Another warning about creating artificial life that I found in the myths and in historical times is to look carefully at who is it that's deploying automatons and what are the purposes. I found that in both the mythic tales and in real life, in antiquity, it was autocratic tyrants who usually commissioned automatons, from Zeus to the king of Sparta, and used them as weapons to torture or kill their subjects. It's often said that tyranny favors technology. So I think one of the messages from the myths is that we need to pay attention to who is pushing to develop AI and who is so keen to create killer robots.
After the break, we'll compare the kinds of robots imagined by ancient Greeks who lacked the technology to substantiate their legends and the real-life artificial intelligences that theoretically walk and talk among us today.
Pandora was essentially an evil fembot sent to Earth with a single mission. Her mission was to release evils on humankind for eternity. The myths seem to say that artificial life is good to think with, it's good to imagine in a sort of abstract way, but they give a strong caution that such things could wreak havoc, cause a lot of chaos, a lot of harm in the real world, especially if they're accepted without foresight.
More on that after this short break.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today in Focus is a new Guardian podcast that brings you closer to our journalism by getting behind the news every weekday. You'll join me, Anushka Astana, talking to people at the centre of the big stories impacting our world. We'll use personal perspectives and expert analysis to put you at the heart of what matters. Listen to Today in Focus and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you choose to listen.
Welcome back to Chips with Everything. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. This week we're looking at robots and gods and how the ancient Greeks were able to imagine a world where humans and machines live side by side. To better understand the myths that contained the very first blueprints for what artificial intelligence might one day look like, we're talking to Adrian Mayer, a research scholar in classics and the history and philosophy of science at Stanford University. In her book, Gods and Robots: Myths, Machines, and Ancient Dreams of Technology, Adrian explores what the technologists of today can learn from ancient legends.
And that feeling of awe, sort of mixed with dread and fear, so wonder plus fear, was described by Homer in the Iliad and the Odyssey, and then by classical Greek playwrights. So that uncanny valley effect occurred in mythology, but also in real life in antiquity, because artists and sculptors were learning new technological ways of painting extremely realistic pictures that could fool birds into pecking at a painting of grapes. Sculptors were able to cast extraordinarily true-to-life statues that seemed to breathe and move. And just encountering those for the first time, people in antiquity did feel that uncanny valley effect.
Adrian's book is hardly trying to suggest that all the great scientific minds of the last few centuries stole their ideas from Greek mythology. But it does show that even outside of the scientific realm, people have long been fascinated by these stories. Take Mary Shelley, the famous 19th century writer behind Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus.
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Well, I think Mary Shelley's horror story of Frankenstein, it's a really engaging sort of meditation on the idea of trying to surpass human limits and play God, and sort of the dangers of overreaching by scientists before they really know what they're doing. And in her story, Frankenstein had hoped to use technology to create an artificial android of great beauty and grace. But the tragedy is that the result was a hideous creature, the monster, that resented being brought to life. And we know that Mary Shelley was influenced by ancient Greek myths about automatons and people, witches and sorcerers, trying to imitate nature. And I think her story remains fresh to us because it spins on that age-old tale that warns against playing God or attempting to create life without really understanding or having foresight about the consequences.
Do you think that scientists and science fiction writers today are inspired or influenced by these classical myths?
Well, you know, it's intriguing that when genuine automatons as self-moving devices began to be actually designed and built in the ancient world, in the Hellenistic era, almost all of those self-moving devices and automatons alluded in some way to classical mythology. So I think even in antiquity, the myths influenced ancient inventors. And I think modern technicians and robotics engineers might be willing to admit that they have mythic influences too. Military scientists were certainly familiar with the Talos story. I was surprised to find out that the first SAM missiles, the surface-to-air missiles that patrolled the seas, were named Talos rockets. And even now, just in the last few years, DARPA at Pentagon, the military scientists at the Pentagon, recently named their AI-enhanced automated soldier uniform with an acronym Talos, very deliberate, hearkening back to the Talos myth. So I think there's a lot of influence today from these myths.
In 1942, the science fiction writer Isaac Asimov first introduced his famous laws of robotics, the first of which...
A robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm.
We seem to have always generally believed that robots should be built to benefit humans and not to harm them. But as we see with Talos, which we mentioned earlier, some of these mythical characters develop human emotions and do try to cause harm. So do myths like these offer any suggestions for how to prevent this kind of thing from happening in real life? Or is it inevitable that our creations will rise against us?
Well, I think it's notable that when the self-driving devices and automatons made by Hephaestus are confined to the divine heavenly world of Mount Olympus, used only by Hephaestus and the other gods and goddesses, in that realm they are beneficial and benign. They don't really cause harm. But it's when the androids like Talos and Pandora appear on Earth and they interact on the human plane, that's when things go badly in the myths and Asimov's rules get broken. Pandora was essentially an evil fembot sent to Earth with a single mission. Her mission was to release evils on humankind for eternity. The myths seem to say that artificial life is good to think with, it's good to imagine in a sort of abstract way, but they give a strong caution that such things could wreak havoc, cause a lot of chaos, a lot of harm in the real world, especially if they're accepted without foresight. So the classical myths seem to express both hope and fear about creating artificial life, and those mixed feelings do seem to anticipate our own ambivalence, our own sense of practical and ethical dilemmas about robotics and AI and whether we should accept them so readily.
From the look of these ancient myths, it seems we've had the same ideas and anxieties around automata or artificial intelligence for a long time. The difference, of course, is that we are much closer to having the technology to realise those dreams. So what lessons should we take from these ancient legends as we move into this future?
Many people may think it's kind of ironic to be looking back to the distant past. I'm asking people to time travel more than two millennia to look at what are essentially some of the first ever science fiction stories. But where science fiction leads, technology often follows. And I think the sophistication and the relevance of these ancient dreams of technology and artificial life might constitute a kind of mythology for our age of AI. So I'm hoping that these ancient tales and their messages might enrich our understanding of what's really a timeless link between imagination and science.
I'd like to thank Adrian Mayer for joining me for this week's episode. Special thanks also to Rob and Ryan at Stanford University, who helped us out with studios. If you want to know more, you'll be able to purchase Gods and Robots, Myths, Machines, and Ancient Dreams of Technology via a link on this week's episode description on the Guardian website. Chips with Everything is produced by Danielle Stevens. I'm Jordan Erica Weber. Thanks for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.